the 6-inch guns were used, for instance, we were controlling, obviously, traffic in and out of the channel, and if a boat came along that they wanted to stop and inspect, they would send it a signal, and if it didn't stop, the first round would be a 6-inch sand-filled shell fired in front of the bows, just to say we're serious about this. And then if they didn't stop, they'd probably fire a real one. So that was a 6-inch. Then at the south point behind the rock, there was a battery of 4.5 howitzers whose job was to lob, I presume they'd come out at the beginning of the war, because their job was to lob shells right over the top of the rock onto the Spanish territory. There were AK-AK guns, of course. There were two infantry battalions. The Keystone Scottish Borders were already out there when we got there, and we brought out the Black Watch. And that, I think, was the sum total of the defences.
Presumably from guns on the ships.
Oh, yeah, well, now, of course, Gibraltar was famous as being the base of H Force.
Yes.
Now, H Force consisted, when I was there, of the Ark Royal, a battle cruiser, which originally was the Renown and then was replaced by the ill-fated Hood, a battleship, the Malaya, and then there was a count of one of these old-fashioned, huge county-class cruisers with 8-inch guns, but that came back on one occasion from a fire and obviously been hit because one of its turrets was all bent over. That disappeared and was replaced by one of these very nice modern city-class cruisers, which had triple turrets with 3 6-inch guns in each turret.
Rather like the Belfast.
And it's like the Belfast. And of course then there was destroyers and things which go out to screen them. The Ark Royal, when it came in, it's rather interesting, when it came, of course, it was an enormous boat. I did go over it on one occasion. And when it got it to the south end of the harbour, we had two quite unique, I think, huge paddle wheel tugs, who of course could spin round on their own axes. And one tug would push the bow, and the other one would push the stern in the opposite direction. It just turned the Ark Royal in 180 degrees, then come round and push it up against the dock.
Very efficient, does it?
Oh, yes. And then it was all ready to take off. The battle cruiser was tied up on South Mole. The Malaya was tied up on Detach Mole. But alongside that was the Resolution, which had been in part of old de Gaulle's abortive attack on Dakar, and had been torpedoed and apparently severely damaged, and managed to get back to Gibraltar. But all the time I was there, it just was tied up. And I read after the war that eventually it was taken over to America, repaired, and sent back. North Mole was a coaling mole. We had heaps of coal out there. And then you had the destroyer and submarine pens. So that was the naval side. The Air Force side was, of course, very small. Apparently before the war, there had been some sort of race course between the north front of the Rock and the Spanish border, and that was used for light aeroplanes to land on. But apart from then, of course, when war broke out, that all was closed down. And when I imagine they heard that there was a possibility of Hitler coming through, persuading Franco to let him come through and attack the Rock, they dug some sort of trench, and presumably we really became an island then. But the only RAF we had a couple of very ancient flying boats called London flying boats, which were twin plane, twin engine jobs with a very curved body with a machine gun in the front and a very low, I think they could get down as low as 80 miles an hour, I think. And they used to take off on patrols. And if they came in at night, the RAF would tow out two rafts with lights on, and you could see these two lights. And then in the darkness, you'd hear this roar of engine planes and an enormous splash of water, and then roar of engines as you opened up and took off for another go. Apart from those, we had two or three seaplanes. just single single engine, just a pilot, and they used to take off again on recce patrol, and normally one would take off just before at dawn, and for that purpose they would pull the boom back, which had been closed at night on north for the entrance in north, to give a space for them to take off, and the RAF would put a light on it to show them where it was. Well, I remember I was standing up there one night, this is I was standing on detached mole, and they put the light on, and just as the plane roared, the light fused, so complete blackness, and I saw the plane hit the boom, and the pilot scrambled ashore as the plane sank. The pilot scrambled onto the boom, and the plane didn't quite sink. It was held up by one tip of wing, caught on one of the iron spikes on the boom, which they salvaged the next day. But then, apart from the odd Sunderland coming in, that was the only...
no land-based aircraft.
No, until 1942, which after I'd left, when they built the airstrip. I mentioned the boom in the north, between north and detached. The opening between south and detached was closed permanently by a double boom. They never opened that. And then apart from the normal boom across the entrance, they had a floating boom from the tip of north detached mole to a buoy in the middle of the harbour, which covered the deep channel when the battleships came in. And that was rather interesting because this must have been, I was on North Mole, probably November, when the Italians tried their first attack with one of these torpedoes where the fellow sat astride.
I
can remember this, I was standing on the mole one morning and suddenly there was an enormous explosion and fountains of water from the floating boom. And apparently this thing had come in, the blokes had got it, they thought steered in the right direction, got off and swam away, and it exploded up against the floating boom. They never tried that again, and I was told by somebody that in Algeciras, which was across the other side of the bay, there was an Italian cargo boat that had been impounded at the outbreak of war. And the Italians had sent out these torpedoes in bits and constructed them on the boat, and they came out through a hole in the side, and then this one came across to Gibraltar. But they never tried it after that, but of course they were very successful in similar attacks in Alexandria, where they severely damaged the Queen Elizabeth.
Tell me a bit about the booms themselves.
The booms were huge. I think they're made of wood, sort of huge floating boxes with iron teeth, rows of iron teeth, and there was a civilian, they were a crowd, civilian boom gang that used to come in and operate these things, and they just they had an engine and they just pulled the thing across and then pulled it back. And of course, the ones in South Mole were just left. The one in our one was only, it was closed at night. Yeah. I don't think it was ever closed during the day. But the floating one was there all the time until the fleet was going in and out, and they pulled that back as well.
Position that you were on your six pounders.
Yeah.
You didn't actually fire them in anger.
No. The only time one was fired in anger was we always loaded at night, and during the day if a fog came up we'd load, and I'd moved by that time to detached mole, but the sergeant on North Mole was showing some friends round the gun, because we were rather proud of these guns, and they said, well, how does it fire? So he said, well, you just pull this lever, and he didn't realize that they'd laid it. And a six-pounder shell ricocheted, because also we lowered the barrels, and a six-pounder shell ricocheted across towards Algeciras. But no damage was done. That's the only time they were ever fired.
At least they worked.
Yeah.
So, What were sort of living conditions like?
Terrible.
They were under very tight security.
Yeah, yeah. Well, they were terrible conditions. I mean, on North Mole, we were actually sleeping down inside the mole, and we were on three bed boards and the three biscuits, you know, which was the mattress, and on 6-inch trestles. But as I think it was due to either high tides or bad weather, occasionally all sorts of peculiar liquid came up through holes in the floor. We all managed to get hold of things like beer barrel crates and things, which kept us about a foot or 18 inches off the floor. But of course, then the problem was the bed bugs. And every week we had a bed bug parade where we used to take our boards and crates and things up onto the deck and smack them smartly down onto the deck, and hordes of bed bugs would fall out. And what I did, for good measure, I used to normally tie a rope around the beer barrel crate and chuck it in the sea for a couple of hours and hope that drowned the rest. But the next week, when you did it, another lot fell out.
Yeah.
But it was amazing. They used to finish up, when you woke up in the morning, they were always, they'd been between your neck and the pillow. And I think we got, either the necks got accustomed to it, but in the end, you didn't take any notice of these things. Yes.
What about our food rations and things?
Well, now, of course, the food was pretty well all tinned. I'm trying to remember, I think we did occasionally have fresh vegetables. We always had eggs. We had normally a fried egg for breakfast, but it was mainly tinned.
As far as Spain was concerned, did any supplies come in at all?
Well, I suppose that's where they got their fresh vegetables and eggs from. Because during the day, there was a bit of traffic. I mean, girls came in as cleaners and whatnot. And I think some workers came in to work in the dockyard, even during the war. Although there were no British females on the rock. They'd all been evacuated except the nurses and a famous all-female orchestra that used to play in one of the main bars in Main Street. But the food was pretty awful. I think the worst thing I can still remember it. They gave us tinned tripe on one occasion, which was sort of blue-black in colour, not very attractive. But again, but there was nowhere to. You had to. On detached mole, where I got posted after I replaced a Lance Belvedere who got involved in a fight with somebody and finished up in hospital, and there it was a long narrow room with two bunks on the seaward side and then a passageway, and the cookhouse was a little place at the end, and when you queued up in the morning, you know, a hand came out with gave you a fried egg or something. And there was nowhere to eat it. I mean, if it was raining, you had to go back into this narrow bunk. But I was very fed up with that, so almost as soon as I arrived, I found that beyond the resolution, there was a private yacht that had been commandeered at the outbreak of war and never been used. I think engines packed in. The second lieutenant in charge of the battery at the other end used the main cabin, but I found there was a nice little cabin over the stern with a nice bunk, a big oil lamp, and a wash basin. So I occupied that. So that was quite comfortable.
Yeah. I was pulling rank
But the main, of course, we were on fatigues the whole time during the day, and we were mainly unloading ships with wooden boxes of food, I suppose, and other all sorts of things, mostly in wooden boxes. On one occasion, we had to unload a ship which came in with petrol, and this was in metal, some sort of thin metal case in cardboard things, and they were leaking, someone were leaking. And so the atmosphere was pretty dangerous as they brought these things out of the hold, you know. And we were wearing gym slippers, of course, and told on no whether there was to be any illicit cigarette smoking. And we were very pleased when that was over. The other fatigue, which was probably even worse, the outbreak of war, of course, there was a system of caves and passages at the south end of the rock. And at the north end of the rock, there were some caves and passages, which I assumed were there from the time of the 18th century when Gib was besieged.
Yes. Yeah.
And the authorities quite rightly decided they should connect these two together. Well, Gibraltar Rock is very hard, and they brought out a special squadron of Canadian engineers who were hard rock specialists. And I think during the night, these fellows would be blasting away a narrow, fairly narrow tunnel towards the edge of the rock. And during the day, just want a bit of a drink. During the day, fatigue parties were sent down to get rid of the rubble. And that was a terrible job, as you were inside this quite narrow tunnel, which was quite full of rubble.